Do you want me to stop this, by the way?
What do you want? You want the...
Just play anything and everything.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to run a business? Maybe you've always wanted to, but you didn't know where to start. In this episode, we are joined by the wild personality of Brian Lauzon, an expert at starting up successful businesses. We go over some of his history, what sort of businesses he's created, and some things that you'll need to know to become a successful entrepreneur. This is Sean from Outcast Media, and let's get into it.
Nice. So where are we? What's this house? This is very historic here.
Yeah.
What's the name of it?
Oh, that's a great question. I immediately forgot, but it's Les Trois L'Érable.
Sounds like a rattlesnake.
Oh, yeah. There needs to be more rattle, though. It's
So it's Les Trois L'Érable.
L'Érable. So say Arab.
Arab. Can you go? Rrr.
Rrr.
That's it. So, what's your introduction?
Yeah, so I'll probably do something like, "Hi everyone, this is Sean from Outcast Media here. Today we have a great speaker, Brian Lauzon here."
Lauzon.
Oh boy, here we go. Why don't we just start from the very beginning? Where does your story start? Like, tell me about your parents.
Oh my God! So,
what are your parents' names?
My dad's name was Larry Lauzon.
Okay.
And my mom's was Dorothy Lauzon. One hell of a connection with those two. We worked as a family, and we worked hard.
What did your parents do?
My dad was in the Army, and he always had this craving for business. But he didn't know what he wanted to sell, what he wanted to do. So his first venture, he was buying hot rods.
Like the cars?
Like the old cars.
Oh, yeah.
And he'd bring them home and do a little fix-up. But my mom cut that off pretty quick. She didn't like the idea of hot rods. So he had to come up with another idea. But in between that, you know, there was the Ottawa exhibition.
Yeah.
So what he would do is he'd buy hot dogs, but he'd buy them on special just before they're turning green. He'd head up to the Ottawa exhibition and that, and he'd just put them on the fryer there, cook them, they'd turn brown or that, and he made a pile of money because probably paid 10% of what the hot dog was worth in those days, you know?
Just sold old hot dogs to
people. Old hot dog thing, and then he went out and bought peanuts. When he ordered peanuts, he said, "Well, I'll take 200 bags." He's going to sell those.
Yeah.
But the bags were about 40, 50-pound bags. So we had so many peanuts, we had to put them in coal chute. So to hell with the coal, the peanuts went in there.
Came a peanut chute then.
Yeah. And he couldn't even give them away to the kids. The kids used to walk down the street. As soon as they got to our house, they turned onto another block and went around because my dad was out there with the bags of peanuts to give to the kids. So he wasn't doing too good.
Yeah.
He bought a piano and a little garage he had to refinish them, took care of the piano, got it all ready, and he sold it. He said, "Oh my God." So that's when the whole family thing started.
Yeah.
That lonely piano in the garage, it turned out to be Lauzon Music in later years. You know, we bought our first store, went to the West End of Ottawa, and putting a half a dozen pianos together every weekend.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
We were doing things in that you know, kids today would never do. You know, grab paint thinner and scraping pianos and,
yeah,
you know, staining this, staining that. And as we got older, when Mom and Dad decided to sell the business, Kenny and I, my brother, we took over the business, and we carried on the legacy to today, where Kenny's son, third generation now, is taking over.
What was your first business idea?
So when we were in the old days, when we had that old garage, I'm trying to be creative as a kid.
Okay? Mm.
I'm 11, 12 years old. I want to get in business.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to get creative. And I used to see those old piano, they had the boards on a piano. You know, when you play it, you put that wooden thing in the front.
Yeah, where you could put the music on.
So I'd take those out and I'd cut it and make skateboards.
Oh, okay.
And I said, now, how the heck am I going to make this thing a hit?
Yeah.
Well, my brother, he subscribed to Playboy magazine in those days. You know, they used to send it by mail, Playboy.
Yeah.
So what I would do is I'd make the skateboard. Then I'd go in and take the centerfold, and then I'd cut up the centerfold, put it on the skateboard.
Oh, so you got like a designer board.
Put about five coats of urethane on that.
Mm-hmm.
So here you got a Playboy bunny with all the, you know, with the rollerblades, everything all in. And
yeah.
It was a hit.
Yeah?
All the kids were buying my skateboards, but parents were pretty upset when my mom got the phone calls about the skateboards with the centerfold bunnies on there. That, as my mom said, your son didn't have to buy it. It was for sale, you know?
That's right, you are. It is an exchange,
you know,
right?
It's not his fault. He made the board. Your son bought it.
Yeah.
You know, so I made those for about a year. Then I ran out of Playboy magazines. Okay, so
one thing came up, eh?
Well,
Timer Jughead magazines.
And Archie or, you know, anything you put on the board.
Yeah.
Didn't have the same impact.
Yeah, not as successful.
So that was my first business.
Okay. Then where did you move on from there?
Because we're in the music business and that, we're always playing something. So I took up guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Guitar, banjo, bass. And I took it up and then I started to teach when I was in high school. So at 5 o'clock, I'd start my students till 9 o'clock at night, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Wow.
And so I'd be teaching all through the week. You know, at night and then on Saturday, full time. And I was making pretty good money, you know, for being a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
What's really important for young people and that is always trying to find something
mm-hmm.
that gets you excited to be your own entrepreneurial type of person, where it's a lot of fun creating something that wasn't there and make it something.
Yeah, and then actually fulfilling that demand, you know, like people coming through and wanting it and
seeing. But it doesn't, you know, that spaghetti you
yeah, you know, right, yeah,
you throw that on the wall, it doesn't stick on the wall forever.
Yeah,
you know, so you only can do it as long as
people want it,
there's demand,
yeah,
for it. So on the guitar teaching, my god, that just went on for years. But while I was in high school, I wanted to make money in high school. So what the high schools have, they have always these art clubs and mm-hmm. book clubs. And so I was in the art club. And in those days in Ottawa, there was two gangs that covered the whole city. You're either a Yohawk or a squirrel.
Okay.
A Yohawk, you know, like the Beatle haircut, okay?
Okay, I was picturing Mohawks for those ones, but
the squirrels were the guys with the Brill Cream, you know, the Vitalis, and they got the hair and the chain.
Oh, okay.
You know, the leather jacket, and I look tough in that, you know, so
picturing Grease now.
You're either a Yohawk or a squirrel. So in high school, we used to have Yohawk dances. But I'd get two bands in the gymnasium, battle the bands. The place was packed, and it was a dollar to get in. When it was all over with, I have to make a profit. We gave a dollar to the art club.
Yeah.
A dollar to me, and a dollar to the art teacher.
Okay.
You know, he was the one that got all the approvals and that with the school. So
yeah.
A buck. The art club had so much money, they didn't know what to do with it. And Ron and I, my God, we're pretty happy. You know, we made a couple of thousand, you know, in a school year.
Now, it seems pretty unorthodox. And then it's also like a bit of a product of the time. Like, I don't feel like you could get away with a lot of that stuff nowadays, you know.
They put you in jail. Your parents would kick you out of the house, okay?
Blunt, but true, yeah.
Take your name away, you know? So it starts when you're young. Try to be creative.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want to do? Sell a box of worms? Okay, where am I going to sell them? Somewhere near a river, you know?
Sure.
Guys are fishing on the bridge. You bring some do worms or you whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying. You know, you might try 50 things and one will stick.
Yeah.
But you never give up. You know, you try it.
It's like the persistence.
You get better
in
life. You know, so see, in the old days, music instruments, what computers are today, iPads.
Mm-hmm.
So that meant on a Saturday morning and at the store, there'd be a lineup outside of people waiting to get in the store. People buying pianos, people buying guitars. The Italian father forcing his son that he's going to play an accordion.
Yeah, okay.
You know, so everything.
Sucks to be that kid.
It was pretty, you know, when the son said, I don't want to play an accordion, you know, and the father said, you are going to play an accordion.
Yeah.
You know, or I'm going to break your legs. You're going to play that accordion. And then I'd have to play an accordion. So the only song I knew in the accordion was Dr. Zhivago.
Okay.
Do you know what?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Can you give you a little hum for it?
No.
Okay.
I think.
Oh, you have it?
Yeah, get down, Dr. Zhivago, yeah. So the whole thing about the music store is you have to know how to play every instrument.
Yeah.
So, selling and recording, Dr. Zhivago.
Yeah.
Ukulele, I'll see you in my dreams.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Okay, I'll see you in my dreams.
Did you have like woodwinds and all that stuff too?
We had trombones, trumpets, violins.
Oh my gosh.
The only time those instruments sold was in the fall, in September, because the schools would start.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
And then we get some use instruments too. Mm-hmm. It was pretty scary to buy those. You know, we'd open up the case. It was a grandfather that had it. My God, you know, you open the case and you get this smell of mold. Been sitting there for 50 years.
Yeah, in a cold, damp basement somewhere.
Yeah, I bought a few of them, you know.
So just curious though, or which instrument did you have the hardest time playing your song for? Was there one instrument that you just can't?
Violin.
Violin, yeah?
Violin was the hardest.
Just because of the posture, the strings, the...
I don't know what it is with a violin, but you got to really, really like a violin to want to play a violin.
Yeah.
At my age, how the hell do you get dates playing a violin? My dad had the saw.
Oh, yeah?
I don't know where the hell he bought this thing, but it was called a musical saw.
Is that... I'm picturing a big two-handed saw thing.
The big one-handed saw.
Okay. And how do you play it? You just...
Well, you put resin on a violin bow.
Yeah.
And you bend the saw at the top.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, he won a free carnival cruise.
For playing the saw?
Yeah, he brought that, on a cruise, and they had talent night.
Okay.
And whoever won the talent night got a free cruise.
Wow.
So everybody's singing and tap dancing and doing everything they can, and then Larry comes out with the musical saw.
Just
everybody was looking at, what the hell's a musical saw? I didn't even know. Yeah. I don't even know where he bought this thing. Czechoslovakia, I don't know where. Guess what song he used to play on his talent night?
Freebird? I don't know.
No, Dr. Zhivago.
Oh, okay. Nice.
And he'd play, it was like that scary thing that they used to. They had a, I forget the name of it. You always heard it in scary movies.
Oh, like a... Like a wobbly kind of string?
No, it was the same over the same concept. It was, I forget what it was. But all those weird sounds in the monster thing.
Yeah.
That was an instrument.
And it was just a musical saw.
But I couldn't believe it. He got a free trip. And I still have a saw.
Oh, you do?
Yep.
Oh.
I can't get one note out of it.
I was curious about the store itself. Do you have any, like, couple memorable stories?
When we used to buy those old instruments, okay, and the people have them. Maybe, my dad played a sax and that.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you, you'd probably die with some kind of disease, you know, pulling that thing out and blowing on it. I had a woman one time, I learned that my mother has a character, okay?
She
was always very quiet.
And sure.
Woman came in, wanted to sell her saxophone. Here we go, open it up, the smell comes, oh my God. And my mom looked at her and said, well, I'll give you $75. And boy, I'll tell you, that woman was pissed off. How dare you? My father played this since Christ was a cowboy or whatever, you know? Yeah. And how dare you, offer me $75, you know? And she was screaming in the store. And then my mom said, well, if you don't like the $75, take that saxophone and shove it up your arse, you know? And then... So she left the store. I said, oh, my God, my mom swears.
What do you know?
A few things, a couple of events. You know, the guy that came in gave us a bounce check, and then then I saw my dad grab him by the shirt and by the pants, and he yelled out to one of the salesmen, open up the door. He's he's going out, you know, and he grabbed him by the pants and the shirt and threw him right out in the sidewalk. So we always got used to the special effects, you know, being.
Yeah.
My dad had an idea. Since those green hot dogs I told you about,
yeah,
the Auto X, cost us $150 for 10 days. And then what we did was put a big stage in the front, and we had Donnie Gilchrist. He was a tap dancer in those days. And then his daughter, Gina. So we hired them. We took an old piano, we made it into a honky-tonk piano. To make a honky-tonk, you put fluorescent paint on it, and you got blue lights, so it glows in the dark. And then you put shellac on the hammers, so you get that real clicky sound. So we had a honky-tonk piano player, two tap dancers. We had a little guy, Patty Nado, that was 9-year-old Patty Nado. I didn't realize, I think the guy was a midget. But we never knew because he was with us for 10 years and he was 15, 16. He probably grew maybe a foot. So we kept on telling everybody he's 9-year-old Patty Nado. He needed to get out.
You knew him for 10 years and you kept saying that he was 9 years old?
That little guy, okay, little Patty there was, you know, he'd get out there, get that jig sound and then, you know, the clicking going on the dance floor. And the idea was we put a show on and we had the Teeny Genie organs.
Okay.
The organs in those days, you press one finger and a boom, chicka boom, chicka boom, chicka boom. And it played the bass and the drums and everything.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Play the chord C, go to G, it would play the next chord. And you only needed one finger.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd have a show out in the front.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd come up with the microphone and I'd show everybody, you enjoy this entertainment? Well, you can have this entertainment at home with the Teeny Genie. Then I'd hit the one button, boom, chicka boom, chicka boom, chicka boom. And I say, you don't even need a finger to play this. I play the medley with my nose on the Teeny Genie. This is salesmanship.
Okay? Yeah.
The salesmen were out in the crowd. They had the demo rooms in the trailer. So as soon as we do the tap dance, honky-tonk, piano, Patty Nado, all that, then the Teeny Genie on the stage. And then when the lights went on in the three demo rooms,
mm-hmm.
that's when the show stopped.
Okay.
And then we waited until the lights went off, and we'd do it again, over and over, 35 shows a day.
30? What?
I played that Teeny Genie so much, by the end of the 10 days, I had this pimple on my nose. I swear to God, it was alien because of the dirt. 150 Gordon.
I guess it paid off. And you don't have the pimple anymore, so.
No, it went away.
Looking good.
Pretty good.
So in the music store, you worked with it with your family and everything. I could imagine that, you know, I rarely get along with my sisters and my brothers sometimes.
Oh, it's not easy.
Yeah, so.
I think the referees with my dad and mom there was in control now because we respect the fact that they're the ones that started this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Bought a funeral parlor. You know, renovated the funeral parlor into Lowe's Home Music. So I inherited my brother as my partner. Between what he was and what I was, two different birds. I'm totally out of control, doing things, the energy is on this side. My brother was more of a docile guy. So the problem with Kenny was, he'd always need 24 hours when there was a creative idea. Hey, why don't we blah, blah. Do this. What do you think, Kenny? Let me think.
He'd take okay, you'd want to sleep on it kind of thing, yeah.
Oh, and when it came to rock and roll, you know, guitars, amps, drums, and that side of the business, he wasn't interested. He wanted to sell pianos and organs. So there was a lot of fights that were going on. So bad that the salesmen, they just got used to when Kenny and I, when I call him, you a fucking arsehole and you're so fucking brain dead. Like, what the fuck? Where'd you come from? You a Klingon searching for Uranus, you know that? And then, then the sparks would come out and, you know, one of the salesmen are selling a piano and Kenny's got the cash register up in the air. Throwing the cash register at me, you know, customer freaking out, what the hell's going on, you know, he's, oh, that's okay, it's just, the two owners are just having a fight, it's okay, everything's
this is
right.
A normal occurrence.
Normal thing. Let me tell you about this piano and that, you know.
What kind of begs the question, why'd you leave the music store? Like, what happened from that, and what happened after?
Well, I stayed in the music, okay, but
mm-hmm.
now we're getting into the age of 20, 25, 30,
mm-hmm.
you know, I wanted some adventure in my life.
Okay.
As I said to my daughter, Brittany, whatever you do in your life, put some adventure in your life.
Mm.
You know, go somewhere, do something. You know, in Brittany's case, she traveled all over Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Freaked me out on this thing called couching.
Yes, you know, couch surfing.
I'll go online, find a couch, a sofa.
Yep, sometimes a cot.
You know, whatever. And then you just move into this guy's house, you know?
Yeah.
He could have had scars all over his face, wearing chains and collar ties, and as long as he had a couch.
It works, I guess, right?
It worked. She came back alive. I couldn't believe that. So I landed in Jamaica.
Oh, okay.
You know, a whole gang of us went down. I fell in love with Jamaica. It was a holiday, but then the holiday turned into a business. Here we go again.
Oh.
Opportunity. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
We were sitting on the beach with a friend of mine, Nick. He was so poor, he used to rent his motorcycle to the tourists, and he'd wait to get his motorcycle back.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever he made renting his bike, that's what he survived on.
Oh, wow. Okay.
He was from Pennsylvania, living in Jamaica, married Jamaican. And I'm looking at this guy, Ray's Parasail. In the grill. Every day I sit down and I'm on the beach and I'm kind of, geez, this guy, crazy, he's flying a lot of people. So One day I asked Nick, you want to get in this business? And he said, yeah, what do you got planned?
Mm-hmm.
So I threw him in the car. We went to this town called Savlamar and we incorporated the company right away in Jamaica. It was called Negril Pariski.
Oh, okay.
So now I'm off on another tangent, okay? But that ended up being 7 years that I had a water sports in the grill.
Wow.
We had everything. We had a dive shop, full-blown.
Yeah.
Patty dive shop. We had a 120-foot pirate ship.
What?
And we'd do sunset cruises and on Wednesdays, nude cruises. Because it was
on
a
the
nude,
pirate ship?
On okay. A pirate ship. There was a nude beach. Had Hedonism too, the next hotel. So everybody was on the nude beach. We'd promote nude cruises on Wednesdays. But I couldn't pull it off. Everybody was supposed to be bare arse, okay, on the ship.
Yeah. Right?
But a Jamaican, you know, when I said, okay, Blake, all the guys, you gotta take your thong off, okay? Everybody's nude on the thing. You know, the scream and yell, you know, the patois. No, man, we're not going to do that, man. You know, so we came in an agreement. The white guys, take your thong off. And then the Jamaicans, okay, leave them alone. So, and then we do nude cruises.
Mm-hmm.
We made $80 bucks a head, packed. That ship was packed.
Did you operate the boat or were you just like there? Or
no, we had the ship. It was a 120-foot ship. That's going to make money. Now, what else is going to make money? We have three parasail boats, so we parasail people.
Wow.
We do about, round it off, 150 people a day we'd parasail.
Wow.
Problem with in the parasailing thing, the wind came from inland.
Oh.
Flip up a sail.
Yeah.
There's nothing coming from the sea. What you see in Mexico before they hit the hotels, you know. So what we'd have to do is the tourists had to run down the beach. And we'd hold the sail up, and we'd run down the beach.
Oh, okay.
Okay, with the tourists.
Yeah.
Until the sail caught.
Right.
Okay, now another problem we had to get through was the holiday traffic of the sailboats that were in our bay.
Quite
so
a
as
lot.
As soon as you get the sail up, now you got to dodge the boats to get the tourists out.
Yeah.
Parasailing, and then bring them back down. You know, and I was a real big guy on safety. You know, so my first day in business and that, I told my boat driver, he used to have roll a joint, okay? Those days, it looked like ice cream cones. He had this thing like a cigar in his mouth, driving the boat, flying tourist.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him he can't smoke. That's it. You can't roll a joint. You got to drive the boat normal.
Mm-hmm.
And he landed a tourist in a sea grape tree. He lost his equilibrium, I don't know, the distance,
sense
or whatever.
Of judgment, something.
Boy, that guy went through that tree. He was bouncing off all the branches, and we had to take the machetes, go up and chop it down, and I got 20 tourists sitting down, standing on the ground below, and I'm yelling down, just going to be a minute, don't leave, we're going to be right there, everything's okay. And they'd wait while I'm chopping this parachute out of the roll a joint right away, roll, you know, give it to the boat driver, put them back to normal, everything's normal. Oh, my God. We probably went through about 500 Band-Aids, and by this time we got three boats. We're going down the beach, and then one would come down, then the next one would come down. The third one, that was the problem. All of a sudden, this wind came out of nowhere. It was so strong, a German tourist that was up there with his camera. We yelled at him with his camera, and we couldn't get him down. So We said, okay, well, the boat sank going in reverse because the wind was so strong. 450 feet of rope.
Yeah, with a tourist.
A German guy up there freaking out. I don't know German, but he was yelling at me, Tanzen blicken, Hunden blicken. But then the boat driver got mad because the boat was getting crushed in the coral.
Oh.
At the bottom, so he cut the rope.
What?
He was so mad that the boat was getting all mashed up and that. And he took off.
This boat driver... Like, that's insane.
Well, we told him, don't do anything, leave him alone. But what happened was the wind took the German.
Yeah.
And he left Jamaica. And he was going over, he went over an island. It was called Booby Kay Island. It's a big, big island. And I could just see a little man.
This poor guy.
And I said, my God, it's not coming down. So I had to jump in the boat. And I had to go out and follow him until he came down. So I'm about 2 miles out to sea. Now, when I'm looking, I can't see Jamaica anymore, you know, because the waves are so strong, the boat's going up.
Yeah.
And now you got to come down, okay? Big, curly waves. Boat's only 18 feet long. We're coming down just like a toboggan.
Yeah.
And we go back up again. And then we stop the motor to see if he's still alive. By that time now, he's been flying in the air for about 20 minutes. I'd yell up from the, you okay? And I'd hear, Tanzen blicken, Hunden blicken. So I knew he was alive. But then it got to the point, I said, I can't see the island anymore. Now I'm looking at the boat driver.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Blake's Jamaican. You're born on the island, you know. If you're out to sea, you guys know there must be a star or a moon or something that shows you.
That you could use for guidance. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, no, that's a pile of crap. They're out there and they can't see the island. He's in the same boat as I am.
Yeah.
He didn't know where were we going, you know,
mm-hmm.
out to sea or this, but we still had to follow this guy. Then it got to the point and I said, Blake, I don't want to die. I figured I was going to die. So we cut a deal. We said, we'll go out another half mile. And if he doesn't come down, we're just going to try to find our way back to Jamaica, phone the Jamaican Air Force, and tell them that there's this guy in a parachute that was on his way to Cuba, okay? Because I never thought this guy would come down. You know, finally he came down. And then when he got to the shoreline there, he ran to his wife. By that time now, you got about 100 tourists out in the beach,
mm-hmm.
you know, thinking that I'm bringing back a body, okay, when we came in. Yeah, so he was in tears, grabbed her by the kneecaps on the ground and crying. And first thing I always think about after one accident is wonder what the next one's going to be. Tourists are very dangerous, you know, with themselves whenever they go on a holiday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can put a piece of thread from a cliff to cliff, promote crossing that piece for $20. Tourists will say, is it safe? Oh, yeah. They're doing things that they never did before.
That's an insane story. Well, I'm glad to hear that he's okay, though. But do you got anything else from Jamaica?
Well, we always had competition. Now, my competition used to sink my boats.
Really?
Yeah, so I'd wake up in the morning, and then I'd see two ski boats sunk that night. And
literal sabotage.
Sabotage. You know, and you had security guards there, and at night, and that they'd all pass out. So we had to come up with an idea to stop them. And Nick had a thing. He said, look, meet me at the water sport, 6 o'clock. I get there in the morning. He's got two goat heads.
Okay.
We went down to my competition. He was about a third of a mile down the beach and that. Here we are. We're in front of Ray's. Nobody's there. 6 in the morning. Put the bamboo sticks up. Put the goat heads on there. Come back. And I said, okay, Nick, what's the concept? He said, just wait. Christ, I didn't know, but that was voodoo. You know, we put a bad spell on Ray's water sports with the two goat heads. And we can hear him screaming, we're not working. We're, you know, this. You got a bad curse on the water sports, man. You need a man of science to take the spell off. And next thing you know, nobody's there. Some guy, man of science out of Kingston,
mm-hmm.
had to take the spell off. We made a pile of money while he was out of business. You know, and I told Nick, I said, whatever you do, make sure that you got a couple of those goat heads in the freezer.
To do again.
We need it at all times. Okay, so that was the revenge that we did with our
competition. Just drop a voodoo spell on your competition. Yeah,
the day of the goat heads, you know.
So why did you leave?
in those days, in the 80s and that, there was a lot of pot going on. The concept is this, okay? They'd rent a square in the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
The property owner way up in the mountain. And they'd rent a square and they'd grow their pot.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of buddies were in that business.
Mm-hmm.
These planes would be coming in at night. You can hear them flying in, Cessnas and real small planes. And they had a dirt strip and they'd land and they'd load the plane or the boat. And then the herb would leave from Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
Only once I went decided, let me try this, see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a partner in those days. He owed money and we're trying to find a solution.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of mine came down looking for Jamaican herb. And I connected them. Concept was the plane was going to land and pick up the herb. And I don't know anything about that type of business. And I said,
right.
I said, how much can you load a plane? He said, 1,200 pounds. So I said, what if I put 200 pounds in that plane? What do I get? He said, well, when it gets to Florida, we take half of whatever your portion of the herb that you got.
Okay.
Sounds okay. Okay, what do I have to do? I got to get it over to the strip, and then everything all happens. The night that the plane was coming, I had to go and get the herb. So I got my rent-a-car. I gave the keys to my partner. I said, the plane's coming. You got to go and get your herb. But he was too scared, so I got mad, and I jumped in this Toyota rent-a-car. That night, I'm out with my Jamaican friend up the mountains. I don't know where the pot is. Oh, he says, okay, stop the car. It's here. So I'm on the road. I see a little thatch bar on the side of the road. I'm right on a highway. And he comes out with two bed sheets loaded with pot. So I'm freaking out. We open up the hood of the trunk of the car. We can't fit the pot. There's so much pot in that first bed sheet. We had a hard time closing the lid. I don't realize how much 200 pounds of pot is. And I'm freaking out. And I'm thinking, if I ever get caught, I'm in jail for life. But now the sweat's going on. And I'm freaking out. And how the hell did I get myself into this? And not making a good dealer. Okay, pot dealer wasn't making it. I'm driving down the road. Looked like hay blowing out on the sides. I realized the windows were still open. And it was the pot blowing out the window.
Oh, my God.
You know, I'm closer to jail now than I'm ever going to be. We made it back to the water sports.
Mm-hmm.
The plane didn't arrive. He was too scared to land, so he turned around, took off, and whatever I had in pot in that airstrip just rotted away. So I had to pay the Jamaicans $200 a week until the debt was paid. My partner at that time, he tried another one. He tried to load a sailboat. His partner landed in Florida, but he never paid Dave his portion of the pot that he had fronted. A whole gang looking for Dave, they caught him and gave him 48 hours to either come up with the money or you're dead.
My God.
So the deal what we had to do was, I'll give you half of the water sports equipment for his life.
Wow. You made that trade and it actually worked.
So now I'm dealing with a gang of kids that live up in the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're driving around with speedboats, and a fight happened on one of the islands.
Mm-hmm.
And machetes came out, and
wow.
And a security guard got cut up.
What?
And now they're looking for who done it, and they see the color of the boat, and they say, well, that's one of Brian's boats.
Oh my God.
So it's all coming back to me now, whatever happened. So to make a long story short, I had to leave the island. So my escape out of Jamaica was the next morning. I stayed in a hotel because I knew they were out looking for me. And I left on the floor of a Toyota or whatever the hell it was. Bring me right to customs, right at the door of customs to get me out of the country.
Yeah.
And I made it out.
Wow.
Then I went back. You know,
why'd you just go back?
Well, 8 years passed, you know. A couple of the guys were already in jail for murdering a few people.
And hacking someone up with machetes.
You know, the machetes now changed the guns, you know, so I didn't have to dodge machetes anymore.
Yeah, just dodge bullets. So after you're, dodging Jamaican gangsters and driving around with truckfuls of hundreds of pounds of weed, what did you do? Like, what kind of business venture did you go to?
Well, I came back to Canada. I had a house in Florida, in Lauderdale. And I opened up Lozenal Sound in Lauderdale. We were pretty successful what we did. Automation for shopping malls.
Oh, okay, yeah.
There was 39,000 liquor licenses in Broward County. And, you know, it lured me there to go. And I wanted to stay in tropically somewhere, but I'm always wanted to make money in whatever I was doing.
For sure.
What I didn't realize was you might be successful in Canada, what you do, but you can't replicate the same thing
in a different location
in another country.
Right.
You can't. It's not the same.
Different people, I guess.
Yeah, there's different laws, how they pay. You know, we do installations into big bars and all the video, audio, video, thousands and thousands of dollars of installation. Brand new club opening up. But I didn't know that when they open it up, if they don't make it in 30 days, they shut it down.
Okay.
And they head back to New York, wherever they came from,
mm-hmm.
and try to get your money, you know, chasing somebody that becomes a ghost.
Yeah.
You know, because you followed the conditions. That was pretty scary trying to do it in the States. So I kept the house and I went back up to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
I had an opportunity to open up a bar. It was called Pips. Pips was downtown Ottawa in the Atrium building. And Se Japon was a Japanese restaurant that didn't make it. We had an opportunity to take over their renovations that they did. And then we added our renovation. And we had the designers from Regimes in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Regimes was the elite place to go in New York.
Okay.
In those days, all glittery glass and all. So we brought that to Ottawa and we designed this very glittery club, French cuisine restaurant, all of that. I think I was about 12 years too soon for Ottawa. That was too glittery.
Yeah.
The all the ambassadors would show up with their bodyguards and all the VIP. All the business owners, restaurant owners.
Well, what originally inspired you to open up like a bar?
Right time, right place.
Yeah. Back you saw the opportunity and...
Here we go again.
Yeah.
Let's open it up. In those days, when cocaine came out, nobody had a clue what the hell it was. It landed in Miami and landed in, you know, all of Florida and everybody's doing lines and partying and they don't know... The other side, what it'll do...
The long-term effects
on screwing up your life. It's not there yet. It's a brand new drug. Nobody knew what was going on. We're all doing it. Toronto, Montreal, everybody's party lines and, you know, John Travolta, disco fever, you know, all of that going on. You know, I wasn't... it wasn't something that I needed.
So you found the entrepreneurship of opening a bar was more, you know, insightful than... You know, just wanting a party. That's why.
Well, a little bit of that.
I guess there's always a little bit of partying, right?
A little bit, you know?
Yeah.
And one thing's, you know, when you're sitting down with, remember some of the RCMP guys trying to educate me about the bar business.
So yeah.
Every bar has a dealer. Okay, has a dealer, all right. Where is he, you know?
Yeah.
Because in those days, you know, people would go to a bar, and if they want to buy any drugs and that, there's got to be a dealer around. Found out who they were.
Yeah.
They're in my bar. I can't do anything about it.
Right. So is it still open today?
No.
You know, oh, okay.
I sold my shares out of that. I didn't want to be in it. Too much drug scene thing going on. Disco, hall, crazy going on, you know. It was just a crazy world that I was more of a daytime guy. I like to run a business during the day, not sitting there at 4 o'clock in the morning. Christ, you know, how many people lost their marriages? How many people lost their houses where they went so broke that when you thought that that drug sucked everything out of you, you still needed a shovel to dig another 10 feet in the ground. Okay, until you had nothing. That was the other side. How many lives you know, were completely devastated because of that drug. And today it continues on.
Mm.
A little scarier now than in our heyday and that. But I saw a lot of people, they lost everything.
Yeah. Well, you dodged another bullet there, I think.
Another one.
I'm assuming there's a lot of still development time between the cocaine 80s to where we are now.
I started a simple thing that I read on a little piece of paper about doing commercials on the hold line of telephones. And I said, oh, shit, we should be doing that. In those days, no technology. There was loop tapes. Here we're creating.
Mm-hmm.
So while you're on hold, you would hear information about the company's service and what they offer. And we're walking down streets with ghetto blasters going in the stores. You were going down and showing people commercials that we did.
And just trying to sell it from there?
Oh, my God, it was horrible. We had, before loop tape, there was tape all over the floor. You're actually a production house. You're cutting the tape and...
Yeah, splicing
and...
Yeah.
Then we found the famous loop tape and a Panasonic cassette player. You know, that was 83, still going today.
Wow.
You know, with my wonderful daughter and her team.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
we are part of the team, for the record.
Now you guys are part of the team.
You have so many stories to tell of you starting businesses, you know, different things that happened during them, and then you just moving on to bigger and bigger and better ones. What's the takeaway from all this? Like, what can you give for young entrepreneurs who are just starting off? You know, they're in their skateboard era, and they're just starting their careers and their journeys. Is there any like things you could tell them that would save them a lot of time, stress, effort, that would kind of, you know, shorten it for them?
Well, you got two journeys you can do. You're going to either work for somebody,
mm-hmm,
or work for yourself. You know, and experience is only going to give you more positive things that will come from it. None of these businesses ever failed. I got tired.
Right.
Time to move on. So what I say to people when they start these businesses and they're asking for professional consultants and all, you know, what do you think I should do and how to do this, how to do that. If you don't try, you'll never gain the knowledge.
Right.
And from that experience, you also realize that don't marry to one thing unless it's successful. You had a pair of running shoes you made, got a lightning bolt, this gold sparkle, and it takes off, ride it.
Yeah, so you kind of need like the flexibility to, you know.
And it's not over on one time trying.
Mm.
You right. know, I explained journeys of what I've done. There's very few people in the world, okay, that would have that motivation to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I lived in a world that I never worked for anybody. I worked for myself. So every time it was an idea, I have the common sense to think about it. I feel very sorry for people that stay with one thing and it doesn't grow. And that means you're going to have to work harder and dedicate so many years, you know, to make it happen. And the clock doesn't work that way in a business. You got 5 years, okay? That's your clock. That's your time. You got 5 years. And one thing on your journeys when you first start, try not to make any mistakes. Or you are going to make mistakes. But how much money did you lose making that mistake? And are you still there?
Right.
After you fix the mistake.
Can you recover from these
That's
mistakes?
That's really hard.
Right.
So part of all of the craziness, don't doubt yourself.
Hmm.
Like my mother said when we started when we were young, we're not educated, Brian. We're going to get there. It's just going to take us a little bit longer. Our schooling and education, very, very important, okay? Gain all the theory you want in that. And she was right. A lot of you, there's so much excitement when you're doing things. You don't have a clue what you're doing. But all of a sudden, you're looking at it and say, holy Christ, I got $200 in my pocket. Where the hell did that come from?
So it sounds like initiative, flexibility, and the self-confidence to not doubt yourself.
Got to start young.
Yeah.
Throw the adventure in there. Everything you try, okay, you got to be enjoying making it happen.
Right.
It has no value to you if you don't feel excited about what you're doing to generate an income. Business owners, beautiful store, millionaire neighborhood, everything. They go out and buy a place, and she's got a passion to make chocolate muffins.
Okay.
But she's got to pay. She got to pay for the rent. She got to pay for the taxes, property tax. She got to pay for the heat, the light. Where's she getting her money from?
Yeah.
She just cashed in being a nurse for 25 years and saving all of her money and her retirement money, going on a passion for that chocolate muffin. Now, before you did this, did you really check what the hell that chocolate muffin is going to do to you?
Is there a market for it? Is there, you know?
No goddamn way I'd be into a place that I'm paying $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 a month, you know, selling my chocolate muffin, you know, because I want to sell my chocolate muffin.
To make it fit.
It doesn't work. You got to recognize there's blood on the floor.
Right.
You're bleeding. You're bleeding, you know? A lot of people want to open up their own business and they want to do what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's yeah. not going to fly, come out of the sky. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to ask advice for people who just suck money out of you. It's the knowledge, okay? This knowledge that I have now is just, you can open up your own business and selling whatever. That's where it falls off. The entrepreneur got to give his all. Work your arse off. No matter what hour, it doesn't matter, 2 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night or this and that, you go. And you know, you got a 5-year clock.
If you could sum up what it's like to being a entrepreneur in the soul, you know, like in one sentence, what would you say it's like?
Other than getting gonorrhea in your life, it's the most scariest thing that you could do. Is run your own business. There's times that you will have in your business that devastates you. You know, oh my God, I can't take it no more. And you can't go over here. You're not allowed over here.
In the depression side.
Yeah, yeah, throw a couple of tears one day. Just cry your eyes out. Do whatever the hell you want. Scream in your garage and that. Get the fuck over on the other side. You got to stay over here.
Right.
Okay, because that's where you'll fall apart. You can't allow it. And every day you wake up, you know, it's, are you going to have a mental breakdown? I need 9 boxes of Kleenex. This is going to be my week of crying.
Mm-hmm.
It's always playing with you. You got to stay on the side where you just say, fuck it. I'm going for it.
Right.
The most scariest thing you can do. I nice. Just threw gonorrhea in there just for an example.
Yeah. So Brian, just for recap, everyone, Brian is 73 years old. And still not retired. And if you want to hit him up and check out what he's doing these days, he owns a company in Wakefield, Quebec, off of Highway 105. It's called the West Quebec Shed Company. You know what? It's been an absolute slice, Brian. Thank you for coming in.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Really enjoy sharing my unknowns, you know.
Yeah.
The journey.
Yeah, yeah. And through these little tidbits of journeys, you got us some pieces of wisdom through here. So hoping our listeners can pick up on that. And
I hope they do. And don't get gonorrhea, okay?
I'll try not to.
What a good business.
Okay.
This episode was brought to you by all of us here at Outcast Media. We want to thank you personally for listening, and make sure you stay tuned in for our next podcast, going through the trials and tribulations of animal rescue and the people there that are making all the difference. Now, a quick message from our sponsor.
Discover unparalleled elegance and timeless beauty with Gemco Diamonds. For over 40 years, we've crafted stunning fine jewelry tailored to our clients' unique desires. Gemco Diamonds prides itself on supplying only ethical, exquisite diamonds and gemstones, enhancing your style with a signature look that's truly yours. Visit gemcodiamonds.com today to schedule your complimentary consultation. Gemco Diamonds, Ottawa's premier destination for custom fine jewelry since 1975.